You're listening to Boston Strongcast, a place where we talk all things powerlifting, strength, and the occasional scientific nerd session. I'm your host, Kevin Kahn, the owner of Precision Powerlifting Systems, strength coach and competitive powerlifter in the USAPL. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get stronger together.
Hey guys, this is Kevin Kahn with Boston Strongcast. I'm going to do a... So now that I've, you know, if people don't know this or whatever, I've shifted most of my business online. Mostly due to COVID and the restrictions of gyms. Plus, what I realized was, you know, there's a reason why, like, TSA, the strength guys, Joey Flex's group, RTS, like, the majority of bigger powerlifting teams tend to be online. And if you don't own a gym, I understand it. It makes more sense to me. So I've shifted everything that I do online. So one of the things that I'm going to start doing much more now that I'm not sitting at a gym is putting out more content. And so in terms of putting out more content, I'm going to start, you know, the podcast is always going to have a focus on powerlifting. But I'm going to talk about, I'm going to bring people on and maybe talk about field sports and like the fitness industry in general, which I'm going to talk about with Jess today. But I want to have just like different perspectives and reach a different group of people. And I think one of the things is like, I'm a powerlifting coach, so I'm always going to view questions and training from a powerlifting lens. It's a perspective that I'm going to have. So even if I have a field athlete that comes to me and is asking questions, it's always going to come back to the strength is king in my eyes as a strength coach, where others might have different perspectives that I think others enjoy. And I think we can have good discussions off of that stuff and we can get an array of different perspectives. So today it's going to be kind of the first one I'm doing going in that direction. I'm here with Jay Birdie of Jay Birdie Fitness. And we're going to just kind of discuss the fitness industry as a whole and like our, we'll call them trials and tribulations as coaches over the period of time. Because we've had many similar experiences and then many different ones as well. And I think many coaches, personal trainers, even physical therapists that listen to this probably have experienced similar experiences in their realm with that stuff. So I'm going to kick things off. I'm not going to have Jess do a intro because one, nobody cares. Two, no. What I'm going to have her start talking about is I kind of want, when you got out of school and you started being a personal trainer, what it was like in the beginning. And we're going to just kind of like go through some issues that we've had over time and some experiences. And we're just going to, it'll just be a dialogue from that point.
I graduated in 2013. But I was working a little bit before, so at actually Shrewsbury Health and Racquet Club. So,
what were you doing there?
I was a personal trainer.
Oh, okay.
At Shrewsbury Health and Racquet Club. But what? But that was my first, and then also Jaconi's, which is in Clinton, which is another. Actually, Shrewsbury Health and Racquet Club, for all intents and purposes, and Jaconi's is very similar. So they're more or less family-owned gyms, and the personal training, that's what I was doing. It's basically all up to you on getting your clients. So they're not necessarily feeding you clients unless it fits, you know, they're like, oh, this would fit with Jesse or this would fit with so-and-so. So when I first started at Shrewsbury Health and Racquet Club, still as an undergrad, didn't have my degree yet, but I did have my personal training certification. I was told to go up to people when they were like working out. This is actually a great story. And I feel like I could have brought this up on another podcast. But maybe the one that you and I did that never got published, but basically, we were told to go up to people and kind of offer services and like help them if they look like they needed help. And it was so funny because at the time I was like, oh my God, that's so awkward. I can't do that. But now I feel like I would have no problem going up to people and being like, oh, you need to do something. You need to do it like this or whatever. So I went up to, this woman and I was like, oh, it looks like you could use help with, you know, whatever she was doing. And she was like, cool. And I'm like, do you want to do a free one-on-one session? Cause you know, you could always give a free one. And she was like, yeah, that's great. So then I'm training her like the, you know, a couple days later and I see another trainer who was a vet, a seasoned trainer, who was really just a group X instructor, like eyeing me. And I was like, why is she like looking at me? Whatever. And so I like go on, whatever. the next day I get an email from her and she's like, you can't poach my clients and you can't, you know, whatever. And I was like, I didn't even know she was your client. And then it, like, start, that was literally my first client, like, ever. It was somebody I stole. So what this woman did, who she didn't tell me, she was working with this other client. So she just wanted a free session from me with no intention to work with me later on. So she just wanted that free session that Shark, Shrewsbury Health and Racket Club gave. And yeah, so that's where, and then I graduated.
I actually want to stop there and talk about that, because I think that's one of the hardest things, like, in the fitness industry itself, is even, so if me and Jess work for the same gym, ultimately we're our own individual businesses inside that gym vying for the same business within the gym. So it doesn't create this environment, this like team environment. It's everybody for themselves. So it can be like tense. You tend to not get along with a lot of, like, for me personally, I didn't work in a commercial gym for very long. For these reasons, it's nobody got along because everybody's fighting for the same clients. Everybody's judging each other on how they're doing things, when at the end of the day, you know, these people that are coming to personal training, like, they don't give a fuck what they're doing, and it doesn't even matter because they're just like moving around and they just want to do what they want to do. And like, you'll have trainers be like, oh, well, Jess is training people this way, she's an idiot. And then Jess will be like, people are training that way, they're an idiot. And like, it just creates this like terrible fucking environment.
That's exactly what it was. I literally remember I was kind of under the wing of the head trainer there. You know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And no one liked me when I first started. I was like, why doesn't anyone like me? And I thought, like, maybe it was because I was younger. I really was, I mean, point blank, younger than everyone else. Just got out of, actually had a degree in exercise science. I was the only person in the building with a degree in exercise science besides you, but you had already left. And everyone was just like really mean. And it was my first experience of feeling like, wow, like, is this how it's going to, like, I'm like, if this is how it's going to be, I don't want to do this. So then I actually ended up working as an aide, right, a physical therapy aide right after that, because I didn't think personal training was going to be for me. And I remember the girl came up to me, her name was Liz, and she was like, yeah, you can't take my client, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, I'm like, you know what? I had absolutely no idea. And that it's exactly what Kevin just said. There's no fostering. So I was told to go up to people, tell them that they were doing shit wrong.
Oh yeah.
And that's what I meant.
Like, was it, they have headphones in.
Yes,
and it's like,
that's what I mean. Now
I'm on the shoulder.
Now I wouldn't care as much, because I feel like, maybe I sound cocky, but like, if I'm going to give someone a tip, it would be like really me going out of my way to do it, 'cause they're really fucking up. So yeah, you had to like be like, excuse me, like, oh, it's the worst model. There's no worse model than a personal training sales job model at a, you know,
commercial
gym. And,
Now they even like switched it. So now they'll offer a free assessment.
That's different
than coming up to somebody and tapping them on the shoulder.
Yeah.
So now you meet them in a room, you put them through an FMS or some other, you know, bullshit like that. You tell them how, or even better, a complete stranger, you have them strip down into their underwear so you can pinch them and take their body fat measurement with calipers.
Did you ever do that?
Yeah, at a gym I worked at, we had to do body fat. So.
Oh, we did too, but yeah, they had to pretty much take their shirt off, yeah.
I mean, they didn't. I'm exaggerating that a little bit, but you're literally, like, I would just do the 3 pinch, because it's like, this is the dumbest thing ever, and it doesn't even matter.
But
you're basically telling people how fat they are at first, and then you give them this movement assessment that they fail every one, so you tell them they're fat, they don't move right, and then they need to pay you thousands of dollars to help them do those. It was literally the worst business model. Like, I ended up, when
terrible.
I was in that room with people, like, I ended up not even doing a lot of it and just having a conversation and asking what they wanted to do. And then, like, take them out on the gym floor and, like, do something for a few minutes. But it was, their business model is just, like, it's very, very off. And I think it's created this culture in the fitness industry that, like,
yeah,
it's become very centered on the actual, like, trainer as opposed to, like, what the person actually wants.
We ended up, the girl and I ended up getting along. And then from that point on, you know, I fended for myself, really. And I knew that that's the thing. At that moment, that's when I learned that's what the model was. Okay. So I learned by doing, which was good. But it was also, it's just so funny. Like, I was this, I just look back and I was so young then and so 100% so innocent. I personally would never have treated anybody like that. I mean, I also think this girl was like a huge
D-bag.
D-bag, yeah. And it was just, and that's the thing, yeah, you don't get along because everyone's competition. It was definitely a rough start. So then from there, I went to, I didn't know if I wanted to go back to school or not to become a physical therapist, which is the trajectory of the kinesiology program I took at Becker College. And I was an aide, a PT aide for a little while. Anytime someone tells me that I need to be somewhere from like 7 to 3 or whatever, 9 to 5, I just try my hardest to not. So I was like, I didn't like it. I actually was between two offices. One office was cool with like some younger people and we like kind of had a good time. The other office was just me, the therapist, and this woman who was teaching me insurance stuff, and her and I didn't get along, but I did learn a little there. It was very old school PT though. But yeah, so that's from Shark. And then I did that for a couple months.
So like the only reason I get into this is because I liked playing sports. I was like, oh, this sounds fun. Right. And it's like, oh, cool. I could be in the gym. And it's frustrating. So less than 2% of this field has a master's degree, which I ended up going on.
Less than 2%?
Less than 2% in this field. Because there's no return on investment and it's unnecessary, right? Mm-hmm. So even with an undergrad, you don't need it. Like you were working, doing what you would do with the certification. So like the education just, it's a small portion, I think, of the people who actually work in the field. Not that that's a bad thing, but I think you have such a low level of entry that it just kind of allows anybody to enter it. And when you allow anybody to enter it, you get this perfect storm of situations where like bullshit can be sold to people. And I think too, what happens when you have low level of entry is you get this group of people who they know enough to be dangerous. And they really don't, like, we get this, like, I'm going to pick on what you said about, like, old school PT.
Yeah.
Right? So how people have done it over a course of a period of time is probably important to understand. Like, you can't just throw that away if they've been getting results from it. Like, I think we're in this, like, weird evidence-based, like, fitness world where it's like, you know, evidence has blind spots that can help be seen when you actually have like real world experience. So you have a lot of people live in this like philosophical world of fucking scientific papers that they really don't know how to practically apply when it comes to the person standing in front of them.
I also think it's a way personal trainers or fitness coaches try and make themselves seem much more important than they really are.
Oh yeah, and like when you're competing with everybody, even in the same gym, like you need to find a way. That's why you put them down and you pick yourself up and be like, I'm evidence based. They're not because they're doing something different. They're dumb. I'm smart. You should hire me.
Yeah.
And so you get it in these like same perfect worlds. So I did for the majority of my training life. I probably spent less than 8 months in a commercial gym total. So it was mostly high school kids, some college kids, like sports teams and stuff that I was coaching. And the problem with that is like the money sucks. So I'm stuck in this. I definitely don't want to be a personal trainer because I don't like doing the adult fitness stuff. I can't afford to do high school strength and conditioning. So let's spend more money and go get a master's degree. So I actually ended up, I got so burnt out. Like I couldn't show another person how to do a fucking push-up again in my life. Like I hit this like burnout period where it's just like,
after how many years?
So this was probably after almost 10. Yeah. About almost 10 years. And I was like, I literally can't fucking do this anymore. So I took a break from coaching and I went and taught at a school for people who wanted to become personal trainers. And that was fine. Like the only issue I had with the school is every 3 months, it's a new group and you're teaching the same stuff over and over again. But like I found ways that I could be creative and like put my own spin on it. So, but it gave me a break from being part of, like, I was part of the fitness industry still, but, like, being an active coach in the fitness world. So my hours got cut at the school, and I needed to find a part-time job to go along with it. So I kind of had an idea of the places I wanted to work. So then I ended up in a place that powerlifting was a big focus of it. So, you know, without going there, I never end up where I am now. And, you know, it was great in the beginning because it's like, ooh, this is a breath of fresh air. Like, people wanting to lift heavy. Like, when you're in the world of high school strength and conditioning, like, the Mike Boyle way of doing things just tends to be, it tends to run rampant. And, like, Mike Boyle has his reasons for the way that he does things, and they're his reasons. I can't stand his cronies that sit there and there. They just regurgitate his words without really having the, like, real-world practical experience of doing things. Like, come up with your own thinking. But that's what the world ends up being. So it's like a bunch of fucking half-kneeling dumbbell overhead press with 8-pound dumbbells. It's like... It gets really fucking boring to try to coach people to do those things and, like, talk about their pelvic position. And it's like, who gives a fuck? Like, nothing that they're doing right now is actually carrying over to be any
good. Well, yeah. And so, yeah, it's funny too, when you mention, cause like when you're a starting, go ahead. Actually, I'll bring this up later. You're still going.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say,
I'm going to go on to a different.
Well, when you're starting out as a strength coach, when I was in college, I worked at Holy Cross for my internship, which if you were in Worcester at the time, it was kind of a big internship to get, and you had to apply for it. And I actually knew somebody who worked there part-time with the football team. So he, like, kind of just got me in. Otherwise, I don't know. It was kind of a competitive at the time. I don't know if it is anymore, but it was a kind of a competitive internship. So, but I remember first learning, I was in the Holy Cross gym, learning about Eric Cressy, not knowing who he was, and until then, Mike Boyle, Mike Reinold, who I ended up working for at one point. And it's just so funny to think back. It's like, they literally were all saying the same thing, and it, like, for right or wrong, it was like the Mecca, like, it was like, what, you know, the Bible at the time. And if you weren't, I think things are, maybe we're older, but I think things have changed a little bit. But I used to be like, oh, well, if Eric Cressy didn't put it out, then, like, it's not legit. Or if, you know, so it's just so funny to, like, start to get out of that phase and realize that none of that shit actually matters if you're training general population for the most part.
I had, it's like I get to intern at Harvard, and it was a lot of Boyle guys, but everybody squatted and stuff. So, like, I think what happens is a lot of people come from Mike Boyle's gym and they end up interning at places. Some become directors. So it kind of, like, that way of thinking kind of infiltrates it, just because he has a setup where he does a lot of internships and stuff like that. And I think, you know, Eric Cressy was one of the first ones that was really, like, putting out information on the internet and stuff. So it was, like, the stuff out there, and it kind of makes sense if the human body's viewed in a vacuum. But it's, like, one of those things where, like, they have their reasons for doing things, but, like, it just ended up being this world of regurgitated words.
Well, also, it was, at the time, it was only, you could really only research athlete or bodybuilding. And then those two things, like, mesh together to now what I think the fitness industry is.
Sort of, I think. I mean, it's... The Journal of Strength and Conditioning is a fucking joke. Like, I mean, if you're looking for research on ways to make athletes improve, right? So, of course, if there's a strength deficit and you squat and you get a little bit stronger, they have the ability to push through the ground harder and all of that stuff. But, like, the research is done on, like, even their trained individuals are not what I would consider trained, or even what I would consider the people that I coach who have full-time jobs that compete in amateur sport to be more trained than some of the athletes that they have doing that stuff. So the research just sucks, and that leaves the door open for different interpretations of it. And of course, people's different bias is going to leave the door open. Somebody like Mike Boyle has over 600 people coming into his gym every day. And you have a staff that tends to be very inexperienced and probably has no experience coaching the lifts, because you don't get that in school. Like, that's something you have to seek out on your own. So if you have 600 people coming into a gym, with an inexperienced staff that doesn't know how to coach the lifts, why would you add the lifts? It's not going to work. I think you do a disservice to high school athletes if they're not squatting, because in college they're going to have to. So the ones who have been taught how to do that stuff are going to be a leg up as a freshman, because when I was interning at Harvard, there could be over 100 student athletes to one coach. Nobody's learning how to fucking squat in that scenario.
Yeah.
So getting back to kind of the topic of the podcast. So I'm working at the school. I need to find a part-time job. And I kind of had an idea of what type of gym I wanted to work at. So I put a message out to my network and ended up at this gym that focused a lot on powerlifting. And it was great in the beginning. But one of the things that's important for me is I need to be in an environment that allows me to constantly like experiment and try things. And like, I don't care if other people do things differently. That doesn't bother me. And like, I want to figure out stuff and I want to do things my way. And find people who want to work with me that want to do things my way. And like, it's a big enough world where we can have different ways of doing things. And if we all just came to the same conclusions, it'd be boring as fuck. So I worked in this gym and I was learning how to, you know, get people strong. And then I ran into Boris Shako. So, you know, especially as a strength coach, you wanted to learn from the Russians, because the way that they did things are way better than everybody else. And it's all these secret documents that need to be translated. And he did things a lot differently. And, you know, I think you see this in powerlifting now. In powerlifting, you see a lot of the programs are very, seems like they have a very big weightlifting background, right? Shako was a weightlifting coach. He was kind of one of the first ones that kind of popularized the more like higher frequency programs. And the Norwegian study came out doing the same thing. So you get these like higher frequency weightlifting focused programs. So I was doing something like that while the gym that I worked at were very like West Side conjugate oriented. And the fact that I was doing something different led to a lot of animosity between myself and the other coaches. So even though we're working for a place that we were paid salaries, we're on the same team, like there's no, but even now that you throw in that we're doing things a little bit differently, it became this us versus them type of atmosphere, which like really sucked. And instead of the gym fostering that growth, right? Like just let me be me, let me figure it out. And like, allow me to fuck around and make mistakes and come around to like forming my own opinions on things. It just turned into you're doing things differently. You're fucking wrong. You're like, and it became this us versus them, and it was fucking stupid. And I think a lot of the fitness industry, even when you get rid of some of the, what we were talking about before, how everybody's competing for the same people. Like we weren't doing that in this gym, but it didn't allow me to grow and like to build a network of different opinions and formulate my own way of doing things. And the part that sucks is like at the end of the day, like that's how we progress as a field in general. If you want progress to happen, we can't just all keep doing the same things. We can't steal those, you know, open up our Tutabompa periodization books and just come up with our, you know, annual training plans and all do things the same way. That's fucking boring. And that's not how progress happens. So I'm in a place that didn't allow me to foster my growth. So I ended up having to do my own thing. And, you know, I'm grateful to be able to do my own thing, but it would have been nice if there was a way. It would be nice if the fitness industry wasn't like that. And you ran into a similar situation too. It's not even with powerlifting in general, because we weren't even competing against each other, because we were competing in different federations. And you can even, you know, if you go on the internet and you go on a forum, like raw lifters hate single ply and they hate multiply, and single ply hates raw and hates multiply, and multiply hates raw. And it's like, we're all powerlifters. Who gives a shit? Like, we can learn from everybody, and we can learn, you know, we can see things from different angles and have different perspectives. Like, I like to read books on economics to even think differently about problem solving in terms of dealing with a complex system to find solutions and to have more agile thinking practice when I have a client that's been with me for a long period of time and all of a sudden we're stuck, right? And it just like opens up your world to thinking differently and stuff. But it's even like that, you know, I don't know how much detail you want to even like go into that or whatever, but I feel you were in a similar situation.
Well, I was in a situation in two different gyms, So I worked at a gym in Waltham with actually one of the guys' names I mentioned, who I did say that if people are actually listening, they'll put the puzzle pieces together. And they brought me on. So this is in my perspective. Sometimes Kevin and I agree or disagree with this.
We disagree more often than
it. We do disagree more often. This gym, this was back in 2017, so not that long ago, wanted a female strength coach because, especially within team sport atmospheres, strength and conditioning gyms, maybe not necessarily commercial gyms as much, but the gym I was working for, we were training, it was pretty much all athletes, high school, college, middle school even, and then some gen pop, which was mostly in the morning. They were like, we just really want a female strength coach. And I, at the time, I'd been going on almost year four at this great gym I worked at in Sudbury, but I was definitely starting to outgrow the place. I will say though, that was the one place that they never, ever, they gave me clients. They fostered my learning. They paid for certifications. It was a good place to work. It had since closed, but aside from that, so I left and went to Champion. I'll just say it. Champion PT in performance, and they hired me really fast. So I think that's just actually a tip for if any young personal trainers or strength coaches are listening, especially if you're a female and you're like looking around and you're the only girl in an interview, you know, like they're showing you the gym and you might potentially be the only girl trainer. It's a leg up, but it might not be one that you necessarily want. And at the time I thought like, yeah, like I'll be there female. They were like, we want a strong female, strength coach. We want someone to, cause at the time I had been powerlifting, for, I don't know, maybe not even 2 years. But they looked at my Instagram, they looked at my Facebook and saw what I had been doing up until that point. And they're like, oh, this is cool. She'll be fine. They hired me literally every time I brought up, can I do this powerlifting group that you guys literally hired me for? Can I do this girls group that you guys hired? Like I used to, I teach middle school girls how to, you know, kind of not necessarily lift, but navigate the gym. And they're like, yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. They put me on the front desk, which I knew was a part of the, job, but I didn't know how much. So I was a part-time admin, part-time strength coach. It was just set up for failure from like the very beginning. There was also trainers there that.
Do you think the fact that you were part-time, so like in any gym, right? People, the trainers look down on the front desk staff and like, you have like, that like bullshit hierarchy, right?
Yes.
Do you think the fact that you were half on the desk?
Yes.
Half in the gym that they looked down on.
That's what they said. Yes. That's what they set me up for failure for. So people saw me stressed out in the morning. So this was their model. Typically the mornings were for gen pop later on was high school. It wasn't that cut and dry, but that's essentially what it was. So the gen pop would come in the morning. They'd be like, hi, Jesse. And I'd check them in and they'd go out on the floor. This was also a salary position. So we weren't fighting for clients though. We all wanted the cool clients to program for them. So it would be cool. Like, oh, look at this powerlifter client of mine, whatever. Long story short, everyone saw me on the desk in the morning and I was stressed out. I had to be there like super early and I was living still in Clinton, which was like over an hour drive in the morning with traffic. So I just like was not sleeping. It was terrible. So then when they were like, okay, Jesse's doing terrible as an admin, which that's not my strong suit. If you know me, you know technology and spelling and like, you know, just like, I'm just fast with everything. So I like spell shit wrong. Anyways, so I also had to do a lot of insurance thing and send receipts. I think that they saw me, I felt less of a coach. And then they would act, oh, I forgot about this until right now. They would see that I was slow working the desk, like meaning like I didn't have a lot going on. Let's say it was like a holiday weekend and people weren't coming in to get PT because I was an admin for the physical therapist. they would be like, Jess, you're slow. Why don't you come on the floor and coach? Like it was a reward, like a treat for me. And they were like, Jess, like I remember this one trainer is like, Jess, you know what? Take a break, get off the desk, go on the floor and coach. And I, at the time, was like, I'm like, as a, like, almost like, I don't know, it was weird. So, you know, I kind of knew halfway in that they didn't actually, and this wasn't necessarily a bad place. It was just wrong for all of us, wrong place, wrong time. Just the characters, we all didn't get along. But I think, you know, that was kind of, that was my eye-opening moment when I said, like, yeah, they didn't actually really give a fuck about me. They didn't care about my Instagram and that I taught young girls how to lift, or I taught people how to, you know, at the time kind of learn barbell movements. They just wanted a female presence. And then they ended up, literally couldn't handle it. They just couldn't handle me there. And that's where you and I disagree. I think one of the trainers was like very, very intimidated by me. I don't know necessarily if I, because I was a female, but I think he, saw that I could have done really well. And he just kind of like kept pushing me down, pushing me down, pushing me down. Do you want me to go on to the next one? Or do you want to stop me?
Yeah. So,
cause I'll move on to my future.
Yeah. I think that's, cause like I had it on the other side too, where the gym I worked at, I was the director. So I was the one in charge of like divvying up clients and stuff and like telling people when they had to work, whether they could have days off and stuff like that. And the fact that I'm doing something a little bit different, it becomes this competition, right? And I tried to not ever make it that way. But of course, there's like human nature involved there. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, in that case, it's not necessarily a personal issue. It's not a male-female issue. It could be personal.
It could be. I think personality issue. At the time, I was like using I was thinking it was because I was a girl.
And I think in a lot of cases, it's just there's still competition for who's the best coach, who's right and wrong for the way of doing things. And like, I think, you know, in those situations, it's just more of a human competition thing than it is like anything else.
But what made me mad was they would say like, you're going to be a good coach, like for a female. That's like how they, oh, like you, we want you to be our badass female coach.
Yeah,
I'm like,
bullshit.
No, I'm just a badass.
Remove the female part, right?
Yeah. So
you should be fostering everybody to be a really good coach.
But
right?
like
the problem with that I have with that situation is instead of holding somebody down like that, like there should be conversations, right? So like, I don't want this just to turn into a bitching session about like the fitness industry or whatever. Like I want to offer, I want to offer solutions. Right. And I think one of those solutions should be is like each individual should. So I would have liked when I was the director to have each one of those coaches come up to me and be like, hey, what do you want to do? Like, what do you want out of this field and this job? And I would say the place that I was at was better than most at actually doing that, as long as it was in line with what they wanted you to do.
Yeah.
But it should be like, even if it's not in line, it'd be like, hey, let's find a way to get you where you want to go. So if you're like, hey, I want to coach a group of women to participate in a barbell sport. All right, well, what are the steps that need to be taken to get you to do that, right? And those little tiny pieces, right? That's your thing that you could have done in there, right? It helps instead of just being like, hey, get off the desk and come help us out, or here's how we do things and you have to do things this way. Like there's just no fostering of growth. So everything becomes this process of most gym jobs, you're going to last 2 to 3 years and then you're going to move on to something else. If you're stuck in a gym for a longer period of time, you know, I might insult people by saying this, but I don't give a shit. It's my podcast. If you're in a gym for longer than 2 to 3 years, you might want to look in the mirror and actually see what you want out of that place, because you're just a drone at that point, just doing what they want you to do, as opposed to potentially being, and there's nothing wrong with that if that's who you choose to be, because it allows you to do things outside of the gym that are more important to you.
Well, that's what happened at my most current job. Was I was there for about 2 years. Yeah, I was there for about 2 years, and I started to kind of trail off and like really get into powerlifting. which I had been hired too for that reason. That was number two, wanting to get like that's where I want to come in and say, if really as a solution, for any coach, male or female, if you feel like they're, you know, hiring you because of, you know, to be like a badass female strength coach, or to say we want people to learn your like powerlifting or your whatever trick. Like, I don't know, just try to, I would say maybe just like take a step back and like see what they, if do they really just need a trainer or do they really actually want your expertise?
Your merit, right? Yeah. You want to be hired on your merit.
Yeah. So, yeah, but so at the last place I was at, it was great for, a solid year. And then, you know, just like any, like what Kevin just said, like any, or what you just said, like any job after 2 years, you start to kind of like you either are just like going in, clocking in, clocking out, or you start to create your own ideas, opinions. I ended up getting a pretty big following at this gym, and I was trying to do things my own way, and I was questioned a lot on my loyalty. I was questioned on if I was pigeonholing myself with powerlifting, which, pro tip, you need to find a niche in the fitness industry. Otherwise, you're just going to be fucking everybody else on the internet. And
not actually fucking everybody else.
No, you're going to be
doing that on the internet.
What did I say? I said you're going to be fucking. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That'd be an approach. Don't fuck everyone on the internet. No, you'll be everyone else. So I actually, it was so weird because when that happened, when I actually was more narrow focused, was when I finally got. Within 6 months, when I kind of just like was like, you know what, I'm gonna do this. Within 6 months, I really grew in clients. I grew in clients a lot because people, when you're, you know, you might be shutting off a larger portion of the population, but then the people that want to work with you are going to find you.
But I think it gets back to that authenticity that we were talking about, right? Like, if you really enjoy powerlifting and it's what brings your passion to the front, because people hire you, right?
Right.
And so if they see your passion and your enjoyment for it and they like your personality and what you have to offer, it's authentic. So, like, if you tried to force yourself to do something else because it was a buzz thing at the time and it's just not enjoyment, like, that lack of passion is just not going to help. So, like, not only, like you were saying, like, I think a niche is extreme. I mean, clearly I'm very, very narrow focused. I'm even focused within my own niche. So I have a niche within a niche. Because, like, I only want to deal with competitive power lifters, not ones that want to see if they can lift. I want the ones that actually are...
Yeah.
Going to be competitive. And
yeah.
Like, I have a different definition of what that means. But, you know, I think if you're not authentic and it's something that you don't enjoy, you just come across as, like you said, as everybody else.
Yeah. And, yeah, so I started to feel some pushback from upper management on certain things. I also was getting thrown clients that I didn't think necessarily belonged in my group just because it, like, I don't know.
Well, it's two different perspectives, right? So as a business owner, you dollars and cents, right? But as a coach, you're more focused on that relationship over before the dollars and cents,
yeah.
Right? So it's just I think a differing perspective between a business owner and the coach. I think that's normal. It just requires more of a conversation.
Yeah. So job number two, I ended up getting let go from.
And I think one thing that, like, listening to this, people need to keep in mind is, like, when we're going through these experiences, we're still pretty young as coaches, right? So, like, Jess is, like, 40. How old are you, 47?
I'll be 31 in 3 days.
But, you know, we're going through these situations in our early 30s. So we're not yet, like, neither one of us are an expert.
Early
so
30s.
We're still that's when I was going through it.
Oh, I thought you were saying.
But we're all finding our way.
Yeah.
Right? And, like, I don't feel I mean, I had a direction, right? So, like, it would be wrong for me to say I was trying to find my direction, but like, I didn't know anything, right? Like, I heard this quote the other day, and it's an absolute, like, fantastic quote. And it's, your education and your training is only as good as what you build with it. So you can read everything you want in a book and online and whatever it is that you're doing, but if you don't build something with it, or you don't do anything with it, it's fucking useless. It means you didn't learn anything, right? So like, I've read a lot. I have multiple degrees within this field, but I didn't have a ton of practical experience, and I still don't have a ton of practical experience with the powerlifting stuff. I've been doing it for 6 years now, but I've had that narrow focus for 6 years, and like, I'm going through this at a time where I'm trying to find my way within the world of practical application. I basically just knew what I had learned. You don't, if you're just dealing with general population clients and even like high school athletes and college athletes,
it doesn't matter.
You just don't know what's successful or not, because you don't have objective measures. Like, you'll find these objective data points that'll be like, okay, well, if they added 5 pounds to their squat, I'm doing my job well. But you tend to have athletes for very short periods of time.
Yep.
So they have no stimulus, your stimulus, no stimulus, your stimulus. So, and they're growing, they're high school kids. So they're gaining size, they're gaining weight. So of course their numbers are going to go up, and it makes you feel good. And you just find these articles online, whether it's from Eric Cressy or Mike Boyle, that just hits your bias to let you know that you're doing well. So you don't really have these objective measuring points. Be a powerlifting coach. And I have lifters that I started coaching when I started coaching powerlifting. So when you coach people for years continuously without breaks, it'll teach you a lot about practical experience and what you really don't fucking know. And, you know, so both of us were in these situations, I think, where we're just trying to find our way and we're trying to learn. And I think this is true of the world in general, but it's just people trying to force what they think and what they want you to think. And it doesn't like allow your, it handcuffs you, which is why I can only do it for so long. Like, you learn what, I am very, very grateful for my last job. Like, I never would have got into powerlifting if it wasn't for that place. I didn't know how to get people strong. I learned how to get people strong there. I learned how to lift there. And, you know, the owner of that gym, they taught me those things. And without that, I wouldn't be where I am today. But there got to be a point where it's, you tried to force feed me your ideals instead of allowing me to grow as a coach. Like, you run, all of a sudden it's, I learned what you can teach me. And now I can't learn more because it's either your way or the highway. And if I want to go and expand my horizon of knowledge, it becomes an issue. And I think you ran into that with that job too.
I was going to say, I literally would not be where I am with my last job. And they're extremely, 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 extremely grateful for what I learned, the people I met, I also learned to foster a community there because I just like felt at home there for so long, you know. And it's funny though, cause I wonder if that's just what gym owners do. Like, once they find their employee, and I don't mean like in a bad way, I just mean like really objectively, maybe this is what gym owners do. I remember at my first job, they said, I wish you went through our internship program versus just coming on, you know, as your own person. And I do wonder if that's just what gym owners do. After a while, they hire people, they kind of get them maybe at a point when they either really need a job or they really need to learn, one of the two. And so you're grateful to be there for X amount of time. And then when we started to get on our feet and realize like the things we liked, the things we didn't like, maybe that is a threat to, you know, said person. And they don't even realize it.
I think we had this conversation yesterday, a little bit, like, I think it's a cultural thing, right? Like, if anybody disagrees, people have a hard time with disagreement just in general. So like, my entire network of coaches that I talk to all of the time, we don't agree on everything. In fact, there's a large spectrum, and I would say I'm on one end of the spectrum. One of the other coaches is on the other end of the spectrum. The other two fall in the middle of like the four coaches that I talk to the most. And I don't want to hang around with a group of coaches that are just going to nod and tell me that everything I'm doing is the right thing to do. Like, I think everybody's circle should be with people who disagree and have different perspectives, because that's how you see your own blind spots. But I think in the terms of like the gym you were talking about, the gym I worked at, they want people to fit a certain mold, right? They don't want people to disagree. They want allies. And I think culturally, we just have such a problem. If somebody disagrees, it's they're dumb, or they think I'm dumb, or they're an asshole, they're whatever it may
be. It's definitely cultural.
It's just, and people just want validation. So like, even on the internet, somebody will post something and it'll be, you know, whether this is political, whether it's science related. Like, I was having a talk with somebody this morning and it was like, oh, well, if you disagree with this, you're anti-science. It's like, no, there's science can literally...
I know what you're talking about.
But it can literally explain it both ways, right? So if I have one narrative that I think is right in my mind, I could probably find science to prove it. This is why it's so important to have people that disagree, because it allows you to see the blind spots not only within the science, but within, you know, the practical application of that same science. You see it in the fitness world all the time. Yeah. You know, the mobility foam rolling stuff versus the people who don't use it. And like, you have the same like arguments back and forth where it's like, my science is better than your science, and nobody can disagree and be okay with it. Like, it just becomes, this person's an idiot. And you'll see it all the time. Like, there are certain groups out there, and like, there are groups that I agree with more and stuff, but it's always showing the other group stuff and being like, this person's an idiot. And it's like,
well, I've actually talked to Zach Abor about this too, about trying to get the old trainers that I still work with some of them at the another gym I work at, talking about how I'm like something about posture, like foam rolling. I don't really remember what it was. And it's just ideals that you want to hold on to because it's like comfortable for them and that's what they've built their career on. And then it just completely shakes that person's world right up when you say that's bullshit. Or, you know, what I'm using foam rolling as it, that's like the easiest example that I can use. So that's what I mean about it, about the threat. And it's something that they might not even realize. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they just feel attacked. And I think that's what happened to me.
And like, for me, so one of the things that I made it perfectly clear that don't force me to do something, right? That I don't believe in, because like I do, I hold true to being authentic to myself. So I swear a lot. I 100% will be myself at all times, because I think the people who are attracted to me are going to be the ones who stick around and want to be coached by me and whatnot.
Well, those are the people you want.
Yeah. So like, I was trying to be forced to do the RPR stuff. And, you know, I understand there are coaches listening to this that might find some efficacy in it, but it's absolute fucking horse shit. And I am okay with somebody who wants to do it. And, you know, I may have a problem with the narratives that they're saying out there, but I know I can't change the world. And I'm just going to, like, I just focus on doing my own thing. And all I wanted to do was, I literally was like, don't force me to do this, because I will literally tear this apart from the inside out, from science and just general biology, period. But I won't badmouth it, and you can do your own thing. Like, I don't have a problem with people doing that. I have a problem with people force feeding their ideals. And I think you get a lot of that in the fitness community. It's like, you know, if you foam roll, you'll be tagged in this one internet group's post being shown that you're a fucking moron. And if you don't, you'll be tagged that you don't know what you're talking about. And you're anti-science. And it's like, it's just a culture of we can't disagree and be okay with disagreeing. And like, what I think both of those, the place you worked and the place that I worked, what they missed out on is you could have had a business model that would have ended up attracting more people. So the fact that I was doing it one way and my boss would do it another way and the coaches would do it in a similar way to him, it gives you a bigger demographic of people to deal with and different angles to have conversations. So instead of like blocking those people out, having a conversation with those people, you get to see things from a different angle. It's like, hey, you're running more of a West Side program. What would you do to attack this weakness type of thing? And it's like, hey, you run a higher frequency program. What would you do to attack? Like, you could have good training conversations with it and see things. You don't have to take their advice, but like just a different view of perspective sometimes can help shake things up a little bit and help you maybe see some flaws in the way that you're doing things and maybe be able to. So like for me, I learned a lot from high frequency training in terms of recovery and technique and the benefits of it. So like we have parts of it that I use still. And there's also things that I learned from doing it that way that allows me to do the max effort singles in the way that I do the max effort singles. So even though it may seem so different, there's so many pieces of it that still play a role that like I think we miss out on. And I don't know if it's just a lack of critical thinking skills that's taught in school. Like I didn't have these conversations until grad school, and I didn't really find places I worked at to be willing to have these conversations. Like it ended up being more of a pushback.
Yeah.
For those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough because then you're stuck in this position where how do you go about finding a career in this field that's satisfying? Like, I think this part of the human spirit, like we want to learn more, we want to do better, and we want to continue to progress. Like for me, that's really important in a workspace. And I couldn't find that outside of working on my own. And now you're working on your own. And it's like, without that, it's, you know, it's very hard to find a career. And I find it, like, I would quit doing this job if I ever had to go back and work for somebody else at this point.
Well, I've said this a million times, and I stand by it. And I will say the departure of my last job was probably, you know, it could have been anything. It was a natural trajectory of working in a place. So it could have been me leaving. It could have been me getting let go. It could have been because of X. It could have been because of Y, Z, whatever. It doesn't matter. That's exactly my point as well. And I've said this a bunch, like, this is the type of fields, at least personal training, being a strength coach, whatever, you either quit or do your own thing completely. There's really, I mean, you can literally not work for somebody else in this field the rest of your life, or the rest of your career, unless you're like a manager and you have, and you maybe get a share in the company. I mean, there's obviously going to be outliers to that, but I really, that was kind of where I was headed. And Kevin and I talked about this, God, like a year ago. You were like, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, not this forever. I just can't work for someone else forever. And that's just the natural trajectory maybe of our career. And yeah, so now I opened up my own little studio, and I'll do that for a while until truly I figure out what I like really want to do. But I won't, if I go back to a gym, it would be like part-time, like just to make some extra, like cat, you know what I mean? Like some extra cash or whatever. Like I wouldn't be an employee. I would just do like
a few sessions.
Yeah. Like even a fitness together. I joked about a fitness together, but like a fitness together to like do a couple, you know, just as like a part-time job. But yeah.
But the difference is perspective, right? So if you're in a place and you're working full-time, you're trying to make it a career.
Yeah.
In a career,
that's
you're going to have
a
different outlook on, right?
The perspective will be different.
You're going to want a focus on growth and learning and all of that stuff, but a part-time job you're literally just doing for...
Well, I would just do for... Yeah. So that's what, you know... It is interesting to me, though, that every job, you know, we've had in a gym has lasted no more than 3 years.
Yeah, and I think that's true for the majority of the people in the field. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think identifying that, understanding what you want out of a job, being transparent with your employees, your employer, I think all of those things are like good solutions in those situations. I think most employers would be open to having that discussion. And even if there's like a 2-year plan, 3-year plan, I think that would be okay in a lot of cases. But I think in a lot of cases that conversation is just never had, and it just needs to be had more often.
It could also just be that the industry itself too, just you don't make a lot of money. So the owners are, they might not, some of them might not have the tools and resources
because they're running a gym. You know, there's all different factors that play in, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not the most lucrative career, and you definitely have to do your own thing, I think, to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I think there's some efficacy to working for places before you do your own thing, because you can learn not even how to do it right, but also how to do it wrong.
Yeah.
And there's a process of, like, you need to grow up as a human being too. Like, all of us were know-it-alls in our early 20s. Like, you see this all the time in the USAPL. Every 25-year-old powerlifter knows everything about fucking training. And to be honest, like, I don't have any of those people in my circle. I really don't give a shit what they have to say, because, like, it gets back to that quote that I said before, like, what have you built off of your education and your training? Because to me, that's the value in it. So when you get coaches that have built people from the ground up, that have won world championships, that are really strong, they have groups that do very well, they've been just doing it for a long period of time. Like, those are the people that I tend to want to talk to and spend my time with and stuff.
Yep.
You know, so I think if I had tried to do this at 25 years older, it wouldn't have worked out so well. Like, I think it allowed me to get through my growing pains of being an adult. In so many words. So, like, I do think that stuff helps. So, I don't know. I don't even know what the point of this podcast is. I think there's a lot of unspoken things within the... Well, no, because it sounds like we're just bitching about things without, like, a big solution for the general industry, period. And it's like, at the end of the day, it kind of is how it is. So, like, what's the point? But I think being aware of it, I think, can just, I don't know, help maybe open up a conversation about stuff. I think too, just knowing that other people went through the same shit and it just tends to be commonplace, I think people will be able to relate to it more than anything else. But, you know, I think hopefully, I'm not a big fan of, like, more, like, regulations on top of stuff. Like, I think the low level of entry into the field sucks, because you just, you know, gym owners become the experts. Personal trainers, you can get one in a weekend certification somewhere and they become experts. And then you get a bunch of different people just saying different things, and it gets confusing for the consumer who's forced to spend $100 an hour, when it's like, do these people even know what they're talking about, because they can't get their message squared away? Like, the fitness industry is a very, like, weird and unique place. I think you even see it even more in the nutrition realm, because nutritional research is absolutely fake. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And it just leaves a door open for supplement companies and juice cleanses. And it just becomes this, like, world where your quote-unquote experts are just not really respected in the same manner as, like, other fields. And, like, there's just not a general message, general guidelines, general anything. It's just, yeah, like a fucking free-for-all. I got really nothing else to say on it. So you got anything?
No, I mean, I think the point of the podcast today, I don't necessarily feel like we were bitching. I think we're just telling it like it is. For me, the point of being on the, I wouldn't say I'm on the other side of the fitness industry, because Kevin still pointed out that we're still young coaches. But when you're starting out, just keep in mind, like, the people you're listening to and what you really want. And also, I would say that really stand your ground on the things that make you authentic, because that will carry you. And then people aren't stupid. Even if they aren't fitness experts themselves, people go to people regardless of their expertise or their knowledge. So if you're just yourself, I chose Kevin because of his winning personality.
Like most.
That's actually a great example. It's, you were a no bullshit type of coach, and I was looking to become a little bit more competitive. So you had, you know what I mean? So I think also people choose me, because I mean, myself. I don't try to, in the fitness industry, I really don't try to be someone I'm not. Have I fallen into that trap? Yeah. Go back on my Instagram a couple years, of course.
Oh, all of us.
All of us have, yeah. So I think that's the point. It's really standing your ground and being authentic. Even if you're wrong, that's okay. and growing from that. And then, exactly what Kevin said, you know what you don't want and what you do want out of the industry. That's what I tell people, when I meet somebody and I'm training their mom, they're like, my daughter wants to be a personal trainer. Like, what advice do you have? And I
don't do it.
I literally say, don't do it. Number one. And number two is truly just be, you know, if they want to be a personal trainer, more than likely they can like talk to people, have conversation. You're not going to meet somebody who's timid and super introverted and shy necessarily. So I'm like, really just be yourself. I know that sounds really lame. You'll find the people that want to work with you if you're just yourself. So I think, aside from all the bitching about the fitness industry, that's been my takeaway for the last few years. And it has served me right in every sense.
I think, the takeaways for me, I'm not saying that this podcast doesn't have a point to it, but I think for people to understand what they're getting into. So when I taught at a school, I'd ask everybody what they wanted to do in the fitness world. And everybody wants to be the New England Patriots strength coach. But the thing is like those jobs are so hard to come by and the job security in it is so low to begin with that like that's not really what it's like. So I think understanding what it's like if you are going to get into the fitness world is really important. And you'll come to this like there'll be periods of your coaching career where you mimic the ones that you respect, right?
Yeah.
And then you mimic them and try to understand it. And then over time, you know, like there are times where I think about like, oh, the people I looked up to and the people that I would follow. And like Mike Boyle was one of them and Eric Cressy, maybe like Boris Shako for sure. And I still do. But there also becomes this moment where you stop looking up to them and you start viewing yourself as their peer and you start caring less about what they have to say about things. And you start developing your own way of thinking, but you never get there without mimicking those that have done it in a successful way first. And then trying to understand it and coming up with your own questions, coming up with your own answers to those questions. And eventually you just kind of develop your own way of doing things. Like for a long period of time, like our programs would look like one of Shako's. Like it would look very similar to mine. But I was writing them all and doing my own thing and collecting all that data. But now, like our programs, nobody else does our programs. Like if you're not a part of PPS, you're not doing a PPS program. So like I've developed my own way of doing things by going through that process. And it's rewarding, even though it sucks at the times where you might lose a job or you lose some friends because you argue about something training related or whatever it is. But there is something rewarding at the end of the day when you start realizing that like you're building something. So I think if you have that like longer term viewpoint of this is what I want to do, this is what I want to build, this is the legacy I want to leave within this community, it can be a very rewarding field, even though it's faced with a lot of adversity along the way to that. That's all I got.
Yeah.
So let people know where they can find your stuff on Instagram.
I just
a shout out for your training space.
I was just gonna say I just opened my own spot in Medford, Mass. It's a room within a building, so it's perfect for me. It's great. I do one-on-ones there, some small group stuff. J Birdie Fitness, JBF. Not necessarily what I wanted to call it, but it's just the name is stuck. So I'll figure that out down the road. If I named it something else, that would just do me a disservice right now. And online, J Birdie, JBURDIE. If you follow Kevin's Patreon page, I'm pretty much the production.
Oh, yeah. You are there chewing chips.
That's Jay Birdie. I like to call my Instagram like a living business card.
What about your MySpace? Do you want to give that a shout out? You can follow me on Instagram. It's KWKNRT, Precision Powerlifting Systems. Stay strong, Boston.